Hello, and welcome to Nothing Is Real podcast.
My name is Mia.
And I'm very excited to have this platform of a podcast because I've never made a podcast before. This is the first episode, and they always say to have your audience in mind when you're making content, especially when you're new to making content in general. And I definitely have a person in mind for this podcast. He knows who he is. He's 17 years old and he is my nephew. I love him very much. And I guess I'm making this podcast, you know, in one sense to kind of get these ideas out into the world. And in another sense to kind of talk directly to him and to give him some of the wisdom that I've gained over my short life so far. And some of that wisdom has to do with the podcast title, which is Nothing Is Real. So when I say nothing is real, there's really a secret second half to the title, which is nothing is real, but it kind of is. You know, like nothing is real, but it actually kind of is. And that's to say that the things that we perceive every day, there is a certain level of quote unquote reality to them. But really, there is like more than we give credit to. There's a lot of variation in the ways that we interpret the same stimuli. Now, in order to kind of illustrate this idea, I'm going to tell you a story that happened to me at the beginning of COVID. And of course, I know, you know, like everyone has their beginning of COVID story. So it's not the most original thing in the world. But for me, it was very weird because I had been living for the past 2.5 years or so in Japan. And I was kind of not used to life in America. So basically, I had to travel back to the States unexpectedly. And I had a very short notice to kind of get over my reverse culture shock after having been in a different country for 2.5 years. And in that time, I had applied for grad school and it was at, you know, one of my dream schools. Yeah, I had applied to grad school, basically, and that is Harvard University. I know, right? Like, I never expected to get in, specifically Harvard Graduate School of Education. I am a teacher, I'm an educator, and it was just absolutely, like, unreal that I could imagine going to Harvard. So I got in, but of course, COVID happened. And a bunch of things happened where I didn't feel comfortable participating in that year. Like, there were just a lot of things that lined up poorly that I thought would take away from my year at my dream school. So my plan was to withdraw, and then I would kind of, you know, work for a year and figure stuff out, and then finally I would reapply the next year. I was trying to make the best out of that situation. In that year, I was, you know, applying to job after job. It was like, with the exception of right now, which is like, you know, early 2023, I think that was like one of the worst times in history to be looking for work. So every day I was, you know, getting rejections for no reason, getting rejections for things that, like, for work I definitely was qualified to do. And it was really just upsetting. Like, it changed my perception of myself. I was like, maybe I'm not as smart as I thought I was. Maybe I'm not as competent as I thought I was. And it really messed with me. But one thing that happened was I was just having a random conversation with my mom on one of those days. And I remember at that time, like, I was just like, I had in my head, I'm just like, not competent, I'm not smart. And it's really hard to kind of like talk yourself out of that place. And one day I was talking to my mom and she was kind of saying the same stuff. Like, she was saying, you know, she had her own goals and she had her own vision for how she wanted her life to go. And I was like, well, then why don't you try it? And her answer was, well, I'm not smart. I don't know if I can do it. And just hearing her talk about herself, like, it was the clearest thing in the world to me that it was, you know, a lack of self-confidence and nothing more. Like, she is 100% competent and she's capable of doing the things she wants to do. It's 100% within her reach. And to me, it was just clear as day that it was, you know, feeling like an invisible monster. And I kind of had an epiphany where, like, you know, week after week where I was like so certain that my reality was that I was not worthy of anything that I was doing. And seeing my mom say that and being like, no, of course not, it kind of took me outside of myself. And I realized, wow, like, we really do have these perceptions of reality that can kind of warp and twist what is right in front of us. And that's what kind of brought me back to this concept that I learned when I was in college called constructivism. And I do think that constructivism is kind of having a bit of a renaissance right now in media. Like, more and more people are talking about it. And I think it's important because it is just basically the understanding that the world that we live in doesn't have this objective reality to it. It's not just this one reality that we're chipping away at and trying to understand. We all hold different versions of reality because we have different sets of experiences that cause different beliefs, that cause different assumptions, that cause different values. And we're all essentially living parallel lives. And I think that our goal should not be to chip away at this one thing that exists at the center of everything, but rather to talk to each other and to understand, how are you seeing things? And also, how is the way that I'm seeing things not necessarily the case? How is it something that I can understand is just a result of the glasses that I've put on, of the lenses that I'm looking at the world through? You know, we're all familiar with books like The Secret, where, you know, it talks about manifesting and all you have to do is like manifest and you will shape your reality and the universe will give you what you desire. And it is kind of, I think, a bit of a capitalized version of what I'm trying to say, but it is at the core of it true. Okay. Editor's note here. Let me back up because I have to be very careful with what I say next. And that's basically because an understanding of constructivism can easily be misconstrued or abused in one of two ways. The first way is that you believe that you can get anything you want if you just think hard enough. And of course, that's the philosophy and mentality behind books like The Secret, and any self-help book that you've ever read or every self-help video you've ever watched. The problem with this is that it doesn't necessarily take into account that reality extends forth from our previous understanding. We can't just jump into becoming rich. We can't just jump into having a ton of followers on YouTube or Instagram or whatever, because we have to start from where we are in the present moment. And manifestation is sort of abused as a cheat code through life. And while it can be very helpful and motivating to some, if it is misunderstood as a way to get past reality or to sort of transcend above it, then I think that's where a lot of people run into issues. Now, we all know that Peter Pan does not exist. That's one of the things that we should sort of disabuse ourselves of right away. And then the second thing is that you can just lie, which we have seen in media is happening more and more often. And I'm not trying to say that we should just lie our way through life. What I am trying to say, and what I think constructivism gives us a better understanding of, is the fact that we construct truth. We construct our truths based on our experiences and values. And that truth might be imperceivably to extremely different from that of other people's. So therefore, we should take time and energy to understand the variety of truths that may exist for different people, not the variety of lies. Not, we shouldn't sit around and make stories up for each other, but rather we should try to understand what comprises reality for each of us. We also, another thing that constructivism tells us is that we undergo a process of shared meaning making. So we all don't have such wildly different interpretations of reality that we're all like looking at a dog and the next person sees a cat and the next person sees a lizard. But rather we have, like, I would say, a bell curve of shared understandings and interpretations of our stimuli that we agree where when we see a little fluffy creature with 2 ears and a tail and who is generally more more dog-like, we see it as a dog and we call it a dog or whatever we call it in our collective, in our respective languages. So that's to say that the constructs that we make are not just absolutely meaningless. They serve a purpose and they serve us well. Constructivism is a difficult and fraught topic, I would say. And I'm making this podcast for a few different reasons, which brings me into my next topic. So I'm going to talk about the goals that I have for this podcast and basically what I want to accomplish throughout these episodes, in addition to just sort of like having fun and chatting with people who are interesting and having a good time. So I'm definitely here to entertain you all. But in addition to that, I have goals that I think are important for us to all to work on. So the first of those is to hone my and hopefully your practice in constructive criticality. Now, what is that? It's basically the ability to take a set of stimuli and to interpret it and to understand that that interpretation is one of many. So if something happens out there in the world, being critical and saying, okay, why is it that I'm creating this story? Why is it that this is the way I believe it to be? And are there other ways to see it? So I see that as constructive criticality. And it's very hard to do, so I think we all need practice with it. So that's what I want to talk about in this podcast. Another thing I want to talk about is basically the ideas and beliefs and assumptions that are different than my own. Actually, when I was in grad school, a friend and I started a student organization where we would discuss how to communicate across differences. And it was a great idea, but then we soon realized that a lot of us that were talking in that room were all interested in becoming competent in dealing with difference and things like that. But the people that in the room were basically like, we all had very similar ideologies. So because of that, I want to intentionally expose myself to beliefs that actually challenge my own. And, you know, while there is like a human tendency to relate to people who have similar ideologies, and it's also like a feeling of safety that you're not, like, your humanity is not being threatened, or that your ideas and the things that make up your world are not being challenged, I sincerely do want to understand some of the alternative perspectives to our reality. And hopefully that will help me and help us to create a richer picture of this thing called reality. Essentially, when I was in Japan, that's what I was doing every day, right? I was every single day, I had no choice but to talk to people who had a significantly different way of seeing the world than I did. And it was really, really hard. So I think that that's just a practice that stretched me into the person I am today. And I think we all deserve to constantly be flexing that muscle. And my third goal, my third and final goal, is to develop a creative imagination and an agency around changing the world for the better. Because one perspective that we can take is that nothing is real, and then why are we doing any of this? Why does any of this matter? And another perspective is none of this is real, so we can make the world better. Why not? Why not use all of these random building blocks to create something that's better as opposed to something that does not serve us? Now, in order to do this, in order to accomplish these goals, I want to discuss really quickly a few frameworks that I think are important to guiding these conversations. And the first is constructivism. Now, I didn't actually prepare a definition, so I'm literally just going to type it in right now. Constructivism into Google. And okay, the first thing that comes up is constructivism is the theory that says learners construct knowledge rather than just passively take in information. Now, this is immediately, I can see that this is an educational definition of constructivism. My definition of constructivism was taught to me in the lens of international relations, and that's basically that our world and the reality that we experience is a set of constructed beliefs and assumptions and values that can essentially differ from that of other people. That was a really sloppily thrown together definition. But basically, yeah, the idea is that we construct our reality, and there are not, like, so for example, our social constructs, like money, for example, our social constructs are things that we collectively ascribe value to as groups, and those things can be changed. So we don't necessarily always have the same constructs, and we don't always ascribe the same amount of value to each of them. I think that's really important for us to understand. The next one that I'm going to discuss a little bit more in the future is intercultural competence, which is one of my, like, it's like my thing. It's basically the idea that we can build over time, we can flex a muscle essentially of becoming better at speaking across differences in culture. And that's what I started to do when I was living abroad, and I would like to kind of bring that practice into this podcast. Now, the third framework that I want to bring into here, I'm just going to call Paulo Freire, which is, if you're an educator, you're definitely familiar with this guy. He kind of, you know, he kind of relates to everything that I do as an educator. And I would say that one of the most important ideas that he's contributed to education is the idea that education and knowledge in general is not something to be necessarily taught from the teacher and handed down to the student, like putting water into a bucket. The bucket being a child's empty mind, essentially. But there is not really like one knowledge that we can kind of give to people. We're all at the same time constructing our understanding of the world. And we should be constructing our understanding of the world with our students as opposed to our students. And kind of baked into that philosophy is just an overall framework of anti-oppression. So that includes racism, anti-racism, anti-sexism, anti-transphobia, anti-xenophobia, anti-fatphobia, anti-colorism, etc. So all of those things, I think, are essentially parts of the other frameworks that I'd be discussing in this podcast. And finally, I think that the way that I want to conduct this podcast is to shape my language, even if I'm not perfect at always representing these frameworks. I want to shape my language and the kind of perspectives that we take around these frameworks so that we're constantly mindful of them. Again, it's kind of like a muscle that we have to flex so that we can have a more just way of engaging with the world in a way that is respectful of all of us. Now, I'm going to finish this podcast episode by talking about why we need this. And I'm going to bring it back to when I discussed fake news earlier. I would say that on the left, our response to the concept of fake news was not, in my eyes, very effective. So when someone says fake news, the first impulse I would say that a lot of people have is to disprove them and to say, no, these are the facts, this is the logic. And I don't think that's necessarily, I don't think it's very effective as an argument. The main thing is I don't think it's very healthy for our own mindset, because it shows that we're really just struggling with our own attachment to objectivity. And we're trying to cling to, no, this is the correct thing, this is the truth. And while, yes, there is such thing as evidence, there is such thing as scientifically backed research, sure, and that's very important, but we're also kind of reinforcing some of these Western ideals and importance on objectivity. Instead of continuing to do that, I think it's more effective that we build practices of criticality, of self-criticality, of inquiry, and of curiosity, as opposed to trying to come to a collective truth together, which, again, I feel like it doesn't exist. So I think these are important skills to build. And I also think that I'm really excited to see how these discussions will go. I want to see how we can continue to build these skills into our everyday lives and our mindsets. So I'm really excited for future episodes. I'm looking forward to having guests and people to interview and different kinds of topics that might be relevant to you all. But until then, I'm looking forward to seeing you in the next episode.